Welcome to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on ETIN, Emerson College's Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Jacob Nordby, who is an author, a speaker, a radio host, and an entrepreneur. He is published with Jack Canfield in Pearls of Wisdom, 30 Inspirational Ideas to Live Your Best Life Now, has written a spiritual novel, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening, and he is currently writing The Cosmic Compass, An Adventure of Inner Guidance. In 2012, Mr. Nordby was awarded IBE's Top 10 Idaho Authors Award. He launched the internet sensation, Blessed Are the Weird People, and hosts a radio show by that name on Empower Radio. He co-founded AuthorSuccessPlatform.com to help fellow authors develop their marketing outreach and be heard above the noise. And his website is www.jacobnordby.com. That's JacobNordby.com. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Jacob Nordby. Hey, Jacob, how are you?
I am so well. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, glad to hear that. And I thought I would start this off with a poem, because I think this poem takes us right into your book, which we'll be talking about, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And the title of this poem, which is one of mine, is entitled Recognition. Spirit, where are you leading me? To what unknown destination am I slowly being pulled towards? Is the heart of me that does the pulling, moving me in various ways to where I long to be? Why do I hesitate at every tug to follow? My steps seem to pull away from inner urgings, carrying me further into darkness and confusion. Must I meet something there to wrestle with? Shall I claim victory after fighting my demons? Or will I wander down aimless paths forever? Oh, Great Spirit, I am calling for you to manifest in my life now. Show me my purpose, passion, power, and vision, pointing me towards my greater reason to be, to celebrate in purest joy the miracle of me, that I am here and now alive at this time in the history of our planet, have come to this earth on a mission to remember all I came to be. Great Spirit, you live inside of me. Give me courage to set you free. In the words of Mahatma Gandhi, be the change in the world I seek. Within me now, live in me.
That's beautiful, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you. And I thought that sort of takes us into, you know, this story of an adventure, a quest, an unknown something that is pulling at the hero in this story, Jacob, interestingly enough. And it all begins, in my opinion, with this quote you have at the beginning of the book. So I want to read this quote, because I think there's a lot of pregnancy in this quote. There are times on Earth when extraordinary consciousness invades everyday life. There are times on Earth when unseen forces make a calamity of the status quo. There are times on Earth when it seems as though a divine arsonist has set fire to the world as we know it. We live in such times. I mean, you know, after the total debacle and almost melting down of the United States government that happened very recently, all the different things that are happening in the world, you know, the Arab Spring, the turmoil in Egypt and Syria, all these things that are going on, it almost feels like there is a divine arsonist lighting fires everywhere. So I guess the question that comes for me, Jacob, is what was the impetus of the divine arsonist that came into your conscious awareness that wanted this story to be told? And how did it change you after you were given that message and that mission?
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you visit, Jeff, this topic. You know, I went on, I'll just say this first, and then I'll answer your question. About 2.5 years ago, 2 years anyway, it's been a long time, I went on a media fast where I had been, you know, pretty tuned into lots of different news sources and all that. And I just decided for 30 days to take a break. And so for the last 2.5 years, I really haven't listened to the radio except for programs like yours. I've not read any newspapers except for maybe something I'd see as I walk by on a sidewalk. Haven't watched the news, all those things. And I don't say that dogmatically like everyone shouldn't, but it's interesting to me that I don't have the same sense of the world in turmoil as I did when I was still plugged in. It doesn't mean these things aren't happening. But it's been fascinating for me to experience the world without chatter, without that chatter. There's plenty of chatter anyway. But turn back the clock. So interestingly enough, the world I live in today feels quite a bit different than the world I lived in when this book started to come out. But Jeff, this would have been back in 2007, I guess, where this began in earnest for me. And I look back at the thread of my life, and I notice all these different places where I could feel this internal knocking, asking for something other than what I was experiencing, for a greater insight. And that knocking became quite urgent because I was good at ignoring it, you know, down through the years. That became quite urgent. I had built a number of businesses with my family. I had a wife, 3 children, had a big house, and all kinds of responsibilities. I looked great from the outside in terms of, you know, position and all this stuff, but I was feeling more and more frantic, Jeff, internally, and more empty, and more concerned about the fact that time was passing, and I really had no idea where to go or why I was here. I grew up deeply fundamentalist Christian, had left that a few years before all this took place, and was feeling, again, just at sea. And I had started to read some of the beautiful authors like Marianne Williamson and Deepak and Wayne Dyer and some of those, and they really helped me sense that there was something other, you know, something greater, something more inspiring, a life without all the fear and judgment and all that. But I didn't know how to cross that bridge. And then couple that, Jeff, the businesses that I had started were involved in the financial world. And at the time, things were starting to really turn, you know, south on that. And so I was hanging on for dear life, trying to keep it all together, feeling more and more frantic, digging a deeper hole. And, you know, again, from the outside, trying to keep the picture all together. And a young guy came to work for me who asked me, and he actually appears in the first chapter of this book. His name is Luke, and we talked just recently. He's a real person, and he asked me, "Hey, would you come up to the mountains, this place here in Idaho, McCall? Would you come up here and do a meditation retreat?" And he said, "I've done this recently. It's really powerful, and I'd like you to come with me." Well, Jeff, I had never I had really never meditated much in my life before. I'd read about people meditating, but I hadn't really done it myself much. And so, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something inside, Jeff, that was this, and I talk about it in the story here, which is it is fiction, but it's symbolically everything in the book happened. People have asked me that a lot, you know, did this really happen?
Mm-hmm.
Symbolically, and I know you understand that, symbolically everything in there happened. But anyway, there was this deep gong sensation internally that said, you must do this. And I didn't even know why. And at the same time, there was this sense of fear, and I couldn't attach that to anything either, Jeff. Like, why would I be afraid to go up to a beautiful place in the mountains and have a meditation retreat? It sounds very peaceful. Mm-hmm. But there was something inside that both said, you must do this, and the other silent voice was screaming loud, this is scary.
This could change your life.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's kind of delve into the book, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And do you want to just kind of lay it out? Let me start it off. You're a married man with three children, have your own business, the main character of the book is a married man with three children and has his own business, and he's sort of a little bit in turmoil, but at that point in his life, he's not really aware of it. And for some reason, he gets this urge to go up to the family cabin in the woods that Friday and really doesn't have a clear understanding as to why he's feeling pulled in that direction, but goes anyway, even misses a meeting that he's got scheduled and puts that off and decides to go up there. So he goes up to the cabin in the woods, and he is so exhausted when he gets there, he's so relaxed, actually, that he falls asleep in front of the campfire. And when he wakes up, there's a strange individual sitting right opposite him and sort of offering him an opportunity or kind of a challenge. And I want to read this from the book. I don't know how I feel, I said. You do, he told me, but you don't want to admit to being afraid. He was right. I knew better than to be afraid. I had cultivated a life of fearless behavior, hadn't I? Fear was for lesser men, and I had determined long ago not to be one of them. You should be afraid, he said. Well, actually, you shouldn't, but it is quite normal. That's it, though, I said. I don't shrink from challenges. I meet life head on. I believe in the power of belief. He fixed his powerful gaze on me. I felt locked in place. You are living a life you think you should live, he said. You've built a castle in your mind and believe you're safe within its walls. If you come with me, I will take you to places so far away that you may never be able to return. If you do return, you will find your castle is no more. That's why you feel afraid. So you're asking me to change my whole life, I said. I'm asking you to let me show you things you've always suspected. Once you see them, once you experience them, once you know them with all your senses, then yes, you may have a hard time going back to what you currently call your life, he said. So take it from there. Here he is. He's offering this fellow Jacob a challenge. He's saying, meet me here in a week, and I'm going to bring you on an adventure that may completely change your life, but I'm only going to offer this to you once in this life, so the choice is yours.
Yeah, and of course, I've already hinted at the real-life events, which inspired that part, Jeff, and that's exactly the feeling. You know, I've come to a number of crossroads in my life, which up until that point, they felt like optional. Kind of like, hey, this is trying to speak to you, this is a truth trying to be known. But when the crossroads becomes clear, like really clear, then it becomes, in my experience, Jeff, it becomes this choice between choosing life, choosing expansion, choosing to follow the path of heart, or choosing to literally turn the other direction and almost on purpose live a lie. And that's how clear it was for me in this case, and that's how clear it was for the character in the book. It was this deep sense of not just urgency, but what's the word? It was ponderous. It was the sense of you don't get to pretend you don't know this anymore. At least know the choice. You don't get to know where the choice will lead you, but you don't get to pretend that the choice isn't right here. So now the question is, what will you do with it?
Okay. So can you walk us through a little bit more? I mean, give us a little bit of a kind of a thumbnail sketch of what you want us to know about the book.
Sure. You know, and it's funny, I will. Delighted to. Jeff, this was such a... this was the first book I'd written, and it was born in the midst of so much growth and intensity, and it just came. It was one of those that I would sit there at the keyboard, and I often felt that I had unseen presences, you know, and I don't go there a whole lot, but that was the feeling I had, is this just these fingers on my back in a really comforting way. But sometimes I would just be shaking as I wrote this stuff, and it was a reflection of a really intense journey of healing for me to even write the book. So I say that just to say that it's been a few years now, and even now looking back, this almost feels like a whole previous lifetime of some kind for me to talk about it. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating the way life has unfolded since. So interesting to look at it in a rearview mirror, both the book and my own experience from which it was taken. But yeah, so this book is really the tale of a journey of awakening, my own, and of course we follow this character throughout the book, who's asked to see outside of a reality tunnel. And, you know, Jeff, we're all born with these things, these reality tunnels, and we don't even know that they, how solid they appear, because we're born into them. And so that might look like a particular religion or a political outlook, or maybe we're born into a very poor family or a very wealthy family or something like that. Whatever the case might be, as we become self-aware in early childhood, these things have already, this tunnel is sort of formed around us, and that's how we see the world. And so what I've discovered for myself is that most people perhaps don't get the chance to even know that there is a broader reality, a broader perspective, some other way of experiencing the world. So most of us go through this life, Jeff, in this real smooth trajectory. Or maybe it's not so smooth, but it seems cohesive at least. So we go through life with this trajectory. You know, we're born, we go to school, we, you know, go into adulthood and perhaps marry or something and have career, and then we eventually, you know, retire, and then we, you know, we pass, we die. And in many cases, we don't really have the chance to see outside of that one dominant theme, that one dominant perspective on life, how life is. At a fairly early age, though, Jeff, my reality tunnel got rattled a few different times, and so perhaps that was what was the gift that was given me early on, was to know that my way of seeing the world wasn't the only way to see it. My way of seeing the divine was not the only way to see it. But the story of this book and the story of my own life is one where this character, me, I had this huge burden of what the Ruiz family would call, you know, domestication, or Jung would call enculturation. All this burden of belief, I call it a belief backpack, and it was just full of all these heavy beliefs that I felt like I had to carry. I didn't feel like I had any choice but to carry these beliefs about the world, about myself, about God, about other people. And it was very, very heavy, and I was tired of it, but I didn't know how to put it down. And so when I felt spirit, many people would be comfortable with that term. We could call it soul, higher self, however we want to term that, calling me to really explore beyond the boundaries of what I knew, to go off the edge of the map, so to speak. That was both terrifying, and I sensed in that, though, Jeff, a call to true liberation, a call to an experience of life that I couldn't imagine, and a call to put down everything that was heavy, everything that was weighing my spirit down, everything that didn't allow me to see the world and see other people with innocence and just love and the joy of children, you know? And so I know I'm speaking kind of high terms. Please, you're a great host, so please feel free to help me refine.
Yeah, let me jump in there a bit. So I just want to give people an overview as to how the book unfolds. So we've got Lucius and Jacob meeting at the campfire. A week later, Lucius is given a deadline that by 5:30 that Sunday, Jacob needs to come back and prepare himself, prepare his life, his wife, his three children, his associates in business, to let them know that he's going to be leaving for quite some time, an unknown amount of time. And, he'll do what he can to be in communication with them, but probably not. And so Jacob, after he's had this meeting with Lucius, feels very unsettled. He really can't go back to kind of being sort of sleepwalking in his life anymore. He's sort of been awakened from kind of his deeper sleep, and he feels more and more drawn to make that meeting with Lucius. And along the way, he says goodbye to his wife, he gets things in line with the business, and he heads on his way. Now, the interesting thing is that on his way, the weather isn't cooperative. He's going up into the hills, so it's a whole different temperature climate there. It starts to rain and a little bit of sleet, and the roads are slick. And sure enough, he has an accident with a car that is a hit and run. And he's on the side of the road about an hour away or so from meeting with Lucius, and he's sort of out of it. And as he comes to, Lucius is in a black Toyota Tundra pickup truck and kind of pulls him out of the car and says, come on, let's get going. And Jacob says, well, what about my car? And he goes, oh, just leave it there. He says, we're not going to worry about that. And of course, then Jacob is now fully committed. He's wearing his best suit. And of course, it's been a little bit messed up being in the accident and everything. And he really doesn't understand why he's doing what he's doing. There's this great deal of uncertainty. There's this great deal of feeling like, what am I doing? I'm kind of burning my whole life in front of my eyes here, everything I built and tried to keep going. And so then Lucius takes him higher and higher, higher into the mountains and says very, very little about where they're going and what they're going to do. And then at some point, he's talking to him in such a powerful way. He's asking him all these questions. Mm-hmm. And these questions start talking about his life and the depths of his life and what he's uncomfortable with around his family life. And it upsets Jacob so much that he starts feeling like, I'm going to throw up, tells Lucius, you have to stop the car. He stops the car, opens up the door quickly, and just let's go a breakfast on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then gets back in the car, and then he is introduced to these adventures. He meets this group of people, and then he later takes him to another person who then teaches him a new adventure, and then that person leaves him in touch with a new person who then takes him to a third adventure. So it's almost like I want to kind of see this in some respects as a Christmas carol. The ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas future, and the ghost of the present moment. Not necessarily that they line up that way, but you do have three interesting characters that each give Jacob a piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I really want to read is this part where you take us into this group gathering, which is further up that Lucius takes Jacob to in the mountains, and there's this group, and there's this Native American man in this gathering of people, and he goes through a ceremony. But, you know, I'm going to have to stop right here because we're going to take a short break with a pregnant pause, and we'll be right back, but... So can you stay on the line with us there, Jacob?
Certainly. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, no problem at all. So you're listening to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Ferranini, and we're talking today with my guest, Jacob Nordby, about his book, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And his website is www.jacobnordby.com. That's JacobNordby.com. And if you're interested in additional interviews, go to the Planetary Spirit website at www.planetary-spirit.com, where we have about 200-plus interviews archived on the website. And so we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dream of a day when we can live without anger. And dream of a time when we can live without pain. And dream of a way that we can live without hunger. And dream of a sign that the earth can be peaceful. What can we do to get our people looking higher? What do you do in the darkness but look for the light? We can join hands and do whatever we desire. We'll never fail as long as the reasons are. We're gonna live in peace. It's our only chance on earth. We'll get all that fighting to cease and remember what life is worth. Each of us has the power to bring about changes. Both society separates us from the time of our birth. Well, we won't live here much longer if we live as strangers. time at all if we don't learn how to live with the earth. Combining our efforts instead of being parted, sharing a vision that we will have a new dawn. Remember that love is how it all got started. And don't you know that love will keep it going even after we're gone? What can we give the earth that we haven't given in the past? A way to live here on earth, make it last. Dream of a day when we can live in communion. And dream of a time when we can live without fear. Awaken a way to get all of us working together. And know that the time when the earth can be peaceful. Know that our thoughts and our actions are honest and clear. And know that the people on earth will be safe from all fear. Know that the time when the earth can be peaceful is near.
And welcome back to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Fiorinini, and we're talking today with my guest, Jacob Nordby, who is the author of The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And his website is www.jacobnordby.com, JacobNordby.com. So, welcome back, Jacob.
Thank you, Jeff. You know, it's interesting to have you retelling the story and helping me retell it. It's been, I haven't read the book for a while, so I appreciate you bringing me back to the story. It's fun.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Let me also just say that during the break, we listened to a cut from a compilation CD entitled Spirit of Love, and the cut we listened to was performed and written by David Roth and titled Earth. So, okay, so let's go back with the book here, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. So Lucius takes Jacob into the hills of Idaho, interestingly enough, and there he meets a group of people, and there's a very some very powerful transformations that take place. One is this Asian man. He wakes up one day and he's put in a bathrobe, and Lucius tells him to follow this Asian man. This Asian man takes him outside. It's a cold fall sort of wintry day. There's snow on the ground, and the Asian man says, "Follow me." And they walk outside, and all Jacob has on is a bathrobe. And the fellow says, go there to the shower and take a shower and take your robe off. And Jacob's like, you know, I really don't want to do that. And the Asian fellow kind of looks at him like, you really don't have a choice here. So he does that and braces himself, waiting for this ice-cold needles of water to hit him. And what comes out is this warm steam and, you know, warm, steamy water. And so he's just luxuriating in this outside bath shower. And then he brings him inside. Well, no, then he tells him, now, before you put your robe back on, I want you to roll around in the snow that you see on the porch here. And so he does. He rolls around like a dog having a good time. And then he puts his robe back on him, brings him in the house, sits him in a chair, and proceeds to shave all the hair off his head. And for some reason, the most emotional part is that he shaves his eyebrows. So now he's completely transformed as to how he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Where did those kinds of ideas come into your head for how to break this poor guy down?
You know, these are the parts, Jeff, that I don't know how to explain. In fact, many times I would write something that just sort of came through. And later, I'd go, wow, that was really strange. So I'd go and research it a bit, and I'd discover that there was this thread. There was something to it. There was something powerful about the symbolism of it. And that happened over and over again in the book, The Tree of Life, and a variety of things, which I really hadn't spent any time studying. And so this was, you know, they talk about touching the collective unconscious or something.
Yeah.
There were definitely themes which rose to the surface. And Joseph Campbell talks, you know, the themes which rose to the surface, which I had no idea where they came from, but they came through in this fashion, and it was my expression of what was going on in my real life at the time, and the loss of identity. What seemed like a loss at the time, I look back and it's the greatest gift I could have had. But the loss of my identity, you know, if you don't mind, I'll take us through the scene there where the rest of that sort of unfolded.
Sure.
Is that all right? Or you
yeah.
want to tell a story?
Oh, no, please go ahead.
Yeah, so that was that part of it, that, you know, stripping away of the hair, which is surprising. In the external, that's a surprising component to our identity, our self-concept. So the hair got shaved off, and the Jacob character was, later that evening, he was taken up to this sort of a temple space, and Lucius, his guide, or throughout the book he's called the helper, Lucius rang this gong, and all of a sudden, all around this great round room, these other figures appeared, and the floor was this map of the world with the directions north, south, east, and west. And Lucius had seated Jacob down in the center of that space and asked him just to sit there. And then all these other helpers appeared, and they appeared in very different ways. You know, the Native American, sort of a medicine man, and Asian person and an Aborigine woman, and all these different appearances. And after they'd appeared, Lucius brought in Jacob's pile of belongings, all of his stuff. And he had said before, you know, when he made the original invitation, he said, I want you to dress in your best clothes, and I want you to bring your most important books, the things which have really guided your life up to this point, the things you believe in. And so he had all these things, and they brought up this big kind of a stone altar, and Lucius and some of the other, they pulled all of his stuff out and piled it up there, his best suit. I mean, a really expensive, nice suit, you know, like you'd see James Bond wear or something, and his Rolex watch, and they opened up his wallet, Jeff, and they pulled out all of his stuff, his money, which he could feel the connection of that, the money, and they piled all this stuff, and then they pulled out his business card that had his titles on it, and they pulled out his driver's license, all the stuff, and they just tossed it all in this pile. And then they dumped his hair on top of it and poured oil over the whole thing and just lit it on fire. Boom. Everything. Oh, and his books. Forgot that part. His books about success.
Mm-hmm.
His books about how to live life. And they put his Bible on top, the old Bible he had, you know, memorized so much of growing up as a Christian kid. And they poured oil over the whole thing and burned it up. And that was this dramatic sort of crack in the shell. And it really catapulted him into a different experience. Without what had provided the framework for how he saw himself in the world, how he saw other people, how he saw God, how he saw everything in that instant was burned down.
Yeah, and then the Native American man does a pipe ceremony. So he sits down right in front of him, and he does a opening to the directions, the west, the south, the east, the north, and, you know, kind of opens the circle. And then Jacob has, just as a result of seeing everything he's held dear, burnt to a crisp, the pipe ceremony, being in this strange place, being without any hair. Again, I want to read from the book here. The presence of my helper seemed to give me extra power, and I crashed against the inside surface of the matrix which wrapped itself around the planet. He kind of goes out of his body and sort of starts heading upward. He kind of goes into this very, very deep meditation. I bounced back, and the realization hit me that I was weighed down. With every cell, I was clinging to my earthbound self. A word appeared and grew into a solid three-dimensional object. Surrender. It was the answer I had been seeking. Surrender. The idea swept through me, bringing another wave of fear, but now I knew what must be done. Nothing. Nothing must be done. I simply must let go. Then I did it. My fingers broke away from their death grip on what I had always accepted as reality. In that instant, the universe as I knew it exploded like a shattering kaleidoscope. Color and light splintered in every direction. I billowed out into the pitch blackness of forevermore with crazy delight. I was boundless, without limits. The powerful knowledge that there was no longer any me downloaded into my being. I roared with relieved laughter. It was as if I had finally been pried loose from hanging on, and when I fell, the rules of gravity were broken. I had fallen up into the arms of a divine embrace so comforting that it embodied everything that could ever be meant by the word home. If there were no more me, then I was fully absorbed into the ultimate reality. This came as a blinding flash of infinite release. In this state, there was no judgment, no obligation, no weary searching, no struggle. There was only one. I was it, and it was me. I was blossoming outward through the vastness of the universe and simultaneously hovering at the edge of the void, reclining in an ultimate expression of blissful peace. My attention was drawn by this, and I swam through a field of unconditional love to explore the great all-nothing without effort. I was there face to face with what could only be the mystery of mysteries, Yahweh, Baha, Wankantanka, Allah, Krishna, God the Father, Mother, Ra, all that is. I could look into the depths of this and without any sense of separation from it. I was its breath. The very fabric of existence was, as it turned out, love. So, Jacob, I gotta ask you, you're telling me you haven't meditated. You have this incredible experience that we as readers are sharing along with you. I mean, this is stuff that kind of comes out of hallucinogenic trips or deep, deep, deep mystical experiences. And you're telling me that you haven't had any of these. How the heck did you write this?
Well, up until that point, I hadn't had any of those.
Okay.
So, Jeff, when I showed up, and this is back to the story of Jacob's life, my life, when I showed up in the mountains there, and my friend Luke, he got me in his truck, and we drove up there to deep in the mountains in Idaho. I arrived at this cabin, and they opened the door, and it turned out to be a shamanic circle. I had never sought that out consciously in any fashion, and didn't know even what the word shaman meant. But the experience of that weekend was facilitated in that kind of dramatic fashion, and the words you just read, that wasn't a flight of creative fancy. That is, I actually took that portion from notes I wrote that weekend in my own real life during that shamanic experience.
Okay. All right. That makes so much more sense to me because, I mean, other than the fact that you're channeling spirit and, you know, that kind of a thing, which is possible as well. But the thing that I'm in awe of is that you have that kind of experience, because I know I've sort of had those kinds of experiences, but how do you put that into words? And you managed to do that.
Thank you. I don't really have an explanation, Jeff, for that part at all, except to say and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about here, even those words can't really describe it. I'm stammering around here. Yeah, even those words can't really describe the experience. To experience, even for a split second, where there is no more I, I mean, to even say that means that I've retreated from that. I'm looking at it again, you know, as the observer. And so but that was life-changing, absolutely life-changing, Jeff. And, you know, I talked this to a dear friend of mine. Actually, it was one of my brothers, years later, because everyone was very skeptical about how my life changed, and I don't blame them at all. But I was talking to him about trying to share with him without any dogma or you know, persuasion or anything like that. Just trying to share. This is what happened. Try to share this with him, and he said, "Well, so you went up in the mountains and had a shaman drug trip of some kind, then your whole life changed. I mean, what gives? Why was that so important?" And I said, "You know, my brother," I said, "you know, what I've come to understand since is that when some things are inevitable, when we come to a door we've been knocking at all our lives, whether we know it or not, something is going to happen. And I've come to learn, Jeff, that it doesn't, the appearance of it doesn't really matter." I told my brother, this was going to happen in my life, whether it was a car accident or a drowning accident or a heart attack or something was going to happen which was going to break the way I saw the world, break and give me a whole different experience. Because I've talked to many people since then who have had near-death experiences or have had all sorts of different ways these things show up. And there's a surprising continuity. There's a surprising resonance between the various stories of these things. And so I've come to understand that the way it showed up in my life was this one way, and it was very dramatic. And for me, it must have needed to be, because I was holding on so tightly. I really needed to have that experience of true surrender, Jeff, because otherwise my story was so heavy and it was so tightly wound that I couldn't have experienced anything else.
Very powerful. I mean, there is just so much energy of emotion in this book, and there's really a sense of Well, I mean, you're a really good storyteller. So, I mean, I really kept reading the book pretty quickly. And you know, so there is that part. But there's also just certain places where there's so much clarity and it feels like it's your truth that is on the written page there. And now I can see why, you know, that is, because this really was a captured moment in your life, a pivotal moment in your life that really catapulted you into the darkness of a new life. And but I guess the question that would come to me is, Jacob, you know, kind of like what your brother had said to you, okay, so you had the big experience, but why were you willing to just, you know, turn the rudder in a whole new direction and follow that? What do you have any understanding? Do you have any sense or feelings toward why you chose to follow that?
Yeah, let me just say, Jeff, that the experience we just talked about and the experience that's in the story, I haven't sought to recreate that over and over again in my life, like try to go back to that one mountain and over again. So that I have friends who tend to follow the shamanic path all the time, and you know they're in it frequently, and I think that's great. I just for me, the experience was important; it was pivotal. What happened after, though, wasn't this radical, just turn the wheel hard right or left or whatever and go a different direction. I went back to my life, all the things I had stacked up around me. And, Jeff, the sense was, I can't keep living this life. What I experienced opened a window for me, which truly did change everything. But I still had the challenge of a lot of stuff in density that needed to be unwound, that needed to be put down or laid aside in different ways. And it wasn't just an overnight thing. It took another, you know, year or two, actually two full years, for things to unfold in a way that allowed me to move beyond all that. And it wasn't tidy. It was tough. And so I wish everyone who's on a journey of awakening in whatever fashion it is, you know, that it's smooth and gentle and opens like a flower rather than a hurricane. You know, in my case, it was more dramatic. But, you know, when you ask about a sense of why, that singular experience, Jeff, it connected the dots. It pulled together a bunch of threads which had been dangling loose ever since I could remember. It was like, there's this truth that I've been avoiding, questions I haven't been looking at all my life, since early childhood. Mm-hmm. And so that, it became an inevitability. When this happened, it was like all of a sudden things made sense, which hadn't ever made sense before. Mm-hmm. And it really gave me permission to experience in a different way.
Well,
that set the course.
You even say at some point, you know, during that passage I just read, that this felt like a homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you had that experience, that there was something that was almost beyond the ability to put into words, but it's almost like on a cellular level, you knew that this was the deepest you had ever come to that feeling of really being where you belonged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I want to read this interesting quote that you have a couple of places in the book, and it's by Henry David Thoreau. And it starts at the beginning of the book, and then it kind of trails through the book at different times. But I feel this is, an essential part of this story. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. I did not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear, nor did I wish to practice resignation unless it was quite necessary. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms. Henry David Thoreau. Why is that such an important quote for you?
You know, Jeff, that one and another, which I noticed on your website right at the top when I looked at it this morning.
Yeah.
Those were words which just you know, I kept using the symbol of the gong throughout the book. They just rang this inner gong with me that said, if you can touch what is real, many of the things which have seemed so important are going to be revealed as not particularly critical. And I've been running from that knowing. So I've been chasing, you know, success and money and all these things all my life in an attempt to validate myself and feel safe and secure. And the experiences that I had then and have had many times since then, some more or less just real practical, have proven to me that we are always safe. We are always safe. We're always cared for. We came from love. We go back to love. We get to be here in this amazing journey of life and experience it. And actually, the quote on your website, you know, from Chardin, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. I had read those a couple of years before all this happened, and I didn't understand what it meant. It felt real, just like that Thoreau quote felt real. And so what you're talking about here in the story, this is an exploration, like a direct personal experience exploration of what does it mean? What does it mean to go beyond all the concepts, all the stories, and really touch something real? And then how do I bring that back to my life? How do I actually come home and live that? What does that mean?
Yeah.
So that became the question, has been the question of my life since then.
Absolutely. And Jacob Nordby, I want to thank you so much for putting this book out into the world and for being my guest today.
Jeff, thank you so much for all you do. And I know you talk with lots of wonderful leaders on your show. It's just really an honor to be with you. Thank you.
Mine as well. Be well. And my guest today on Planetary Spirit has been Jacob Nordby, who is the author of a very powerful book, The Divine Arsonist, A Tale of Awakening. And for more information about Jacob, visit his website at www.jacobnordby.com. That's JacobNordby.com. And coming up, my guest will be Lorraine Flaherty, who is the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy. So stay tuned for that. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of past shows, where recent interviews are now available on the Planetary Spirit website. And while there, be sure to sign up for the email list to receive monthly updates for who my upcoming guests will be. And there's a place to like us on the Planetary Spirit fan page. So please be sure to do that as well. And so this is Jeff Fiorinini, host of Planetary Spirit, wishing you all a blessed day. Day.